Welcome to Environment Matters, a podcast by the Environment team at Burgess Salmon. I'm Mike Barlow, a partner in the Environment team. Each month, I'll be joined by members of the team to discuss key environmental developments and hot topics in UK environmental law. I'm joined today by my colleagues Ian Truman, who's a partner in the team.
Morning, Mike.
Morning. And Victoria Barnes, a senior associate.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. So, Victoria, what are we going to be talking about today?
So today in our podcast, we're going to be discussing greenwashing and green claims. And the reason why is that greenwashing has become a real hot topic and a very pressing issue over the last few years. And that's because businesses have really sought to try to respond to this growing interest in environmental factors by making those green claims. But with those claims has come increasing scrutiny from kind of across the board, consumers and customers, regulators and activists. So what we hope to do really in chatting this morning is sort of unravel this often complex and multifaceted issue so that our listeners have a better understanding of what greenwashing is, what the risks are and how to avoid doing it.
Great, thanks. I think probably the first thing we need to do is just to make sure that we all understand what we mean by greenwashing when we're talking about these sort of claims. Ian, what do we mean by the term today?
Thanks, Mike. Well, it is difficult. We do have some definitions, particularly in the financial sphere, for example, from the European financial regulators. But there's no universally accepted definition. What we're really talking about here is we're referring to misleading claims about a business's environmental credentials, which are giving an impression of the business's activities that they're either less harmful or more beneficial to the environment than they really are.
Great. So what I mean, I suppose might be quite useful for the listeners then is just to share some sort of practical examples of such claims, just so that we can make sure that we've really nailed that down, what we're talking about. But Victoria, have you got any sort of examples we can think about?
Yeah, definitely. I think sort of off the back of what Ian said, green claims are essentially sort of this any suggestion that your business, your product, your service, your operations is green or sustainable. So the common form that we see is sort of broad terminology, you know, things like eco-friendly, sustainable, on packaging, you see the recyclable or better for the environment. So those are kind of like the common taglines that you see. But importantly, it's not always what you say, it's sort of how you say it as well. So the use of symbols, logos, graphics on packaging, even sort of imagery of nature and wildlife, that can all suggest environmental friendliness. So that's something to look out for as well. It's not that you have to really label sustainable all over your product, for example. And I think we should also bear in mind that it's very often businesses, when they do fall foul of greenwashing, it's entirely inadvertent. Often there are examples of deliberate as well, but really it's often just due to a misunderstanding of how to promote their genuine sustainability achievements in line with the existing rules and guidance.
So how big an issue is this currently?
Well, Mike, what we've seen is that the accusations of greenwashing have really surged in the last 5 years. And this goes back to, you know, what I said at the beginning is that, you know, businesses have sought to meet this growing consumer demand for green, sustainable products. And as they've done that, there's been these more and more green claims made. And we've seen a real rise in misleading or unsubstantiated claims. And to just give you kind of an idea of the scale of the issue, there's been some real notable studies done, one by the EU Commission from 2020. And what the EU Commission did is they looked at a sample of about 150 environmental claims from a wide range of products. And they found that 53% of those had vague, misleading or unfounded information, and 40% were unsubstantiated. Similarly, we've had the Competition and Markets Authority here in the UK coordinate a global review of randomly selected websites and found that 40% of green claims made online could be misleading customers and consumers. So it's a significant problem with unsubstantiated or even deliberately misleading green claims. And the scale of this problem, Mike, is not going unnoticed. Consumers, regulators, and what we've seen, highly motivated and organized NGOs, are really clamping down and calling this out. And as a result, companies are really facing a variety of risks, litigation, regulatory, in addition to the kind of financial and reputational risks that flow from a greenwashing accusation or action or regulatory investigation.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, that really is quite a significant, those are quite significant statistics, I think. So so it really is important that businesses get to grip with this and confront these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Litigation risks have increased in this area. And what we're seeing, and I know I think Ian's going to come on and maybe talk about this a bit later, the regulatory frameworks across the globe are becoming more focused and stringent. So these risks are only going to intensify over the coming years. And you've hit the nail on the head, Mike. Businesses really need to ensure they're aware of this changing environment and they're taking steps to mitigate these risks.
And I think there's quite a number of claims and litigation, isn't there, around this? So do you want to just sort of talk us through a little bit of that and that risk?
Yeah, I can certainly walk through some examples of litigation that we're seeing and sort of some themes and the types that are happening across various jurisdictions. So I think at the outset, just to make clear what greenwashing is, it's essentially misrepresentation, and that can lead to legal claims alleging misrep or fraudulent misrep and possibly breach of contract. And there's an example in Australia of a case that's been brought against the oil and gas company Santos, which is an example of a misrep claim. In that case, which was, I believe, issued in August 2021, the Australian Centre for Corporate Responsibility, which is a shareholder advocacy NGO, alleges that Santos's claims that natural gas is clean fuel and provides clean energy misrepresents the true effect of natural gas on the climate, including the large releases of CO2 and methane during extraction and burning. And the NGO claims that those misrepresentations violate Australia's consumer protection and corporation laws. Santos refutes those claims and proceedings are ongoing, so that hasn't been resolved, those proceedings yet, but that is an example of a misrepresentation claim. And, you know, it also illustrates how prominent NGOs are really becoming in this space, and that's really a growing danger for businesses, the litigation that we're seeing from consumer and pressure from pressure groups and class actions, and that's been most prominent in the US as well. H&M, for example, last year was at the receiving end of a class action in Missouri, where the company was alleged to have misrepresented its garments, its Conscious range, because obviously the products they were being sort of represented as sustainable, but yet most of them, the majority of the product was polyester or recycled plastic. That claim actually ultimately failed, but there's been a sort of numerous cases was sort of followed and came before that across a number of sectors, from sort of food, beverage, airlines. In Europe, obviously class action has been much more less common, but that may be starting to change. And actually at the end of last year in Germany, a consumer group there brought a claim against Deutsche Bank's asset management unit DWS for allegedly misrepresenting a fund's green credentials in marketing materials, and that came off the back of a regulatory investigation. Coming sort of closer to home in the UK, there's been a wave of greenwashing rulings by the Advertising Standards Authority, the ASA. They've really been at the forefront on the greenwashing issue. And there you've seen numerous decisions in the last couple of years against HSBC, Tesco, Innocent Smoothies. And even this year, there was some adverse rulings against Etihad, Shell and Repsol for misleading consumers over their environmental impact of their products and services. I think the last one to kind of mention, which kind of falls into the more climate washing area, so not really squarely a greenwashing claim, but an important kind of piece of litigation this year, and that's the derivative action against Shell that has been brought by a non-profit organisation and minority shareholder in Shell. Now, that claim alleges that the board's mismanagement of climate risk puts the directors in breach of their duties under the UK Companies Act. And this case is interesting as it sort of follows a trend of climate washing cases that have been filed before courts across numerous jurisdictions from the US, Australia, France and the Netherlands since 2016. And certainly it's raised a few eyebrows in boardrooms across the globe. So overall, Mike, I've sort of cantered through some of that, but I think the key message is the legal threat from greenwashing and climate washing litigation is mounting.
Thank you, Victoria. And so it's like a lot of these areas, isn't it, where increasing sort of consumer and NGO pressure is coming through the courts, and we're seeing lots of those sorts of claims. And I think there's a quite a lot of regulation that's growing up as well around these greenwashing issues. Ian, do you want to sort of take us through the regulatory position?
Sure. I think it's fair to say that historically regulation has been pretty limited in this area, but it's definitely catching up. As Victoria mentioned, we're definitely seeing increased scrutiny of these green claims by UK regulators, we'll start with. And we've mentioned a few of these already: Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, Competitions and Market Authority, the CMA, and the Advertising Standards Agency. So sort of starting with the FCA, they're proposing an anti-greenwashing rule as a first component of their sustainability disclosure requirements. And unfortunately, these have been delayed from their initial target of June 2023, but they are now expected by the end of this year, I think. The FCA are also looking at sustainability-linked loans, following concern that the sustainability targets attached to those loans aren't quite stringent enough. So you're getting their people that are picking a product, assuming one thing when actually it doesn't turn out to be the case. So that's sort of the FCA. CMA, in September 2021, they published a green claims code, which was based on consumer and business protection law, but it really aimed to help businesses understand and comply with their existing obligations when making these environmental claims. The requirements of this code are fairly stringent. You know, claims have to be fully backed up with data. They have to be clear, they have to be complete, and they really have to consider the product's whole life cycle. You know, you can't cherry pick the best part of a life cycle. And then, you know, they have to cover the full gamut from production to disposal. And any shortcomings against, you know, performing in accordance with this code could constitute greenwashing and could therefore lead to action by the regulator for misleading consumers. We've also got the upcoming Digital Markets Competition and Consumer Bill, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it essentially gives the CMA the similar powers to those that it enjoys in the competition arena. So it allows the CMA to fine perpetrators or offenders up to 10% of their global turnover for misleading green claims. So that's really going to get people's attention, I think. And this bill is making its way through the parliamentary process at the moment and will continue, or is continuing now, as the autumn session resumes. Finally, in the UK, the ASA has updated its guidance on misleading environmental claims and social responsibility. And this draws on sort of principles established in recent ASA rulings and also those principles of the CMA's green claims code that I just mentioned. So marketeers really have regard to these when making claims about initiatives where they're making any claims about environmental impact. And in addition to these changes to the regulatory frameworks, we're also seeing a significant uptake in regulatory effort in this area, as Victoria has already mentioned. There have been numerous greenwashing rulings, and all the regulators have ambitious programs of work in this area. An example of this, the CMA has announced earlier this year that it's opening an investigation into environmental claims made in relation to a wide range of fast-moving consumer goods, so things like food, drink and toiletries, to try and work out whether businesses are complying with relevant consumer protection law or not. And then briefly on the EU, we still have to think about the EU. There is a draft EU claims directive that was published in March this year, and that aims to establish sort of first set really of detailed EU rules for substantiation of voluntary green claims. And they're looking at requirements for claims and labels to be checked by an independent and accredited verifier, new rules on government's environmental labelling schemes, to really ensure these are solid, transparent and reliable. And the critical thing here, of course, is that this directive does still apply to any company that makes a voluntary environmental claim directed at EU consumers. So that can obviously apply to a business in the UK. And then finally, we've got the EU Council and Parliament that have announced as recently in mid-September this year, the draft rules will be updated to ban generic environmental claims, which Victoria mentioned earlier, things like a product being environmentally friendly or climate neutral, unless there's sort of really proof of that exceptional environmental performance that's been provided. And these rules will go forward for final endorsement and adoption by the Council and Parliament, which is expected to take place in November. And once the directive comes into force, member states will have 24 months to incorporate the new rules into their law. It will apply to UK companies, of course, once it becomes legally enforceable.
So that's really interesting, I think, isn't it? You've got, on the one side, you've got companies increasingly coming under pressure in relation to environmental issues and making sure they tackle those. But on the other, you've got these sort of growing threats of regulation and litigation. So, I mean, Victoria, are we seeing an impact on businesses from that?
We are, Mike, and I think this sort of impending threat of legal and regulatory action, or potentially, is causing a level of business anxiety and leading some to be concerned that actually the result of all of that will be that businesses may feel compelled not to communicate as much about their green credentials,
and that's what we call green hushing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And this is kind of the what people are sort of seeing as sort of potential chilling effect of all of this. And there is some evidence of it. And you know, there's a narrative out there that companies, businesses, kind of have this binary choice between either green washing or green hushing. I'm not quite sure. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it. And the ASA have sort of come out publicly and said that they don't agree that there's this, you know, simplistic binary choice. Although they have recognised that there is causing some business anxiety around sort of the risk of making claims that are misleading. But I think businesses can take comfort from the fact that the ASA and other regulators have, you know, publicly come out and said, look, you know, impactful and informative green claims really do benefit consumers because they enable them to make responsible choices when they're choosing products and services. And businesses really do have a right to speak about their environmental credentials. But in doing so, they need to be sort of realistic and honest and tell a true story of their sustainability journey that they're on. And there may be they're probably along the way on that journey at the beginning or the end or somewhere in the middle. But when they're communicating, they don't want to get ahead of where they are on that journey and paint a misleading or irresponsible picture. So accuracy and transparency of communications is really key to that. And I think, we've talked a lot about the risk here, but I think let's not lose sight of the fact that actually getting to grips with greenwashing presents a real opportunity for positive change. And we've had a number of clients come to us and sought out help and advice, and they're really trying to get to grips with any potential exposure and seeing it more as a positive opportunity to make some changes and put their house in order, but also as I said, doing those things, making impactful green claims that really will have a beneficial impact for their consumers and other businesses out there.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think that leads us on really nicely to you know, so what's the advice in relation to practical steps that businesses can take faced with these risks? Ian, have you got any thoughts on that?
Yes, of course. You know, it's important to recognise, you know, this is certainly a growing risk. And as Victoria mentioned, there's a fair bit of anxiety. But it's important to remember that there are always steps that businesses can take to mitigate these sort of risks whilst continuing to exploit the opportunities that are available. To boil this down to a really high level, I think, like any risk, it's really important to understand your own exposure, you know, what risk you are exposed to as a business. Are you making green claims about products or services, either, you know, inadvertently or intentionally? Are you making climate-related disclosures in your company reporting, for example? You know, and really identify all of the areas of your business and trying to sort of really understand your own exposure. And then, like any risk, it's a question of how you then manage that going forward. You know, have you got a plan for managing those risks? Whether that's developing a sustainability policy, updating your existing risk management procedures to include sustainability criteria, you know, and making sure that this is coordinated and communicated across your whole business to make sure there's a governance structure around this. Because that's the danger with these new risks, is that they don't really fall in any existing box, for want of a better word, within your business, and they just get left. And that's where the problems can arise.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And Victoria, I know one of your things you particularly like doing is helping clients with their disclosures. And I know you've gone through various bits of material that have been identified by clients in the way that Ian's talked about. So have you got any sort of top tips that you could give businesses in relation to when they've identified those communications, how to make them as risk-free as possible and as impactful as possible?
Yeah, I can certainly give some kind of examples of key things to sort of look out for when making sort of any sort of claims. And as you said, Mike, we've worked with a number of clients looking at when they've wanted to make a statement or have a new sort of catch line they want to use on a product. And we've gone through and noted any potential sort of red flags for doing that. I think the ASA sort of described it as kind of practical tips to green speak with confidence. So here are my sort of top tips. I think the first one really is precision. Care and accuracy is really important. And what the ASA actually has said on this point in particular is that really businesses should look to use more limited claims and add appropriate qualifications rather than these broad and vague terms, which often is getting companies into trouble. The second is specificity. Claims should be specific, you know, avoid those vague terms, green, sustainable, environmentally friendly. These absolute claims or comparative claims, you know, businesses, if you want to use those, you need to explain what they mean and what you're comparing yourself to and making sure you can back that up. Balance. Adding balance is incredibly important. And this goes back to what I said earlier, you know, earlier in the podcast about giving a realistic picture of where you are on your sustainability journey and what's happening across your organization. It's especially true if you're making sort of broad aspirational claims. We've often seen this in the sort of high carbon emitting sectors. So businesses tell a balanced story, making sure they're portraying their company's business model sort of accurately. I mentioned Shell, Repsol, and Etihad a little earlier, and they all tripped up on this because they made claims about their green credentials and aspirations, when at the same time, the reality is they're high carbon business models, they're high carbon sectors, and their ads were totally out of kilter of the overall kind of picture of their business. The fourth is evidence. Businesses really need to make sure they're backing up their claims. And the best way to do that is ensure all your claims are supported by robust, credible and up-to-date evidence, and that they're regularly reviewed. And you know, most of the time sort of internal data and records are sufficient, but also sort of independent verification goes a long way as well. And lastly, kind of a final point to sort of sum up really, and if our podcast listeners don't remember anything, they can remember this. It's really important that businesses sort of put themselves in the shoes of the consumer. The consumer will invariably have, you know, really high interest in what these claims are, but low sort of knowledge and understanding of the sometimes complex issues that underpin these claims. So businesses should assume that sort of low knowledge, but really work hard to make sure their message isn't misunderstood. So yeah, shoes of the consumer.
That's fantastic. Really, really helpful practical advice, both of you. And thank you both generally in relation to the podcast. I think that's a good place for us to stop. It's been really interesting to talk through those issues. Certainly greenwashing is becoming an increasingly hot topic. It's likely to remain that, I think, for the foreseeable future. So if any listeners want to get in touch about any of the things that we've talked about today, then please do get in touch with any of the speakers today. So thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for listening to Environment Matters. If you'd like to know more about our environment team and how our experts can work with you, you can contact me, Michael Barlow, or any other member of the team via our website. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy listening to our next podcast, which will be available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts normally. Our next episode is on nature-based solutions. So don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.